Hey, everybody, this is Johnny. I'm just waiting for John to chime in with his Mexican Ma Bell phone connection, which isn't always the fastest, so hanging out and waiting for that. So hang on tight.
Hey, sweetie. What's happening, Emma? Say that again. Oh, my sweetie, I didn't think about it because I knew that you had a lot of money. I thought that you would take it with you. Did you forget? You forgot to bring it? Oh, sugar. And Sensei Joseph is in.
Hello, everybody. It's John here.
Hello, John. It's Johnny. I was just saying that we would be waiting for you and momentarily ready to begin.
Well, there you go. You didn't have to wait long.
I did not.
So how's it going, my man? Let me put us into lecture mode here. Okay. So tell me what's going on.
Tell me what's going on. Well, I got this webinar scheduled right around now. Should be a party. All of
well,
the other guys, suspicious character.
Well, I'm.
No, I guess I can kick that off and introduce us.
Yeah, go ahead.
Hey, everybody. I am Johnny B. Truant. I am here today with John Morrow, and it's always a party when John and Johnny get together for a call. Today's webinar is called Why Your Traffic Sucks and What to Do About It. That slightly inflammatory title is less inflammatory than whatever John had come up with originally and decided to change at the minute. And it was very appropriate because between the time that John and I decided to do this and the time that we are doing it, John knocked another one out of the park over at ProBlogger. If you go over to ProBlogger.net, Darren has actually promoted John's post to the prime featured spot at the top. And the post was called How to Quit Your Job, Move to Paradise, and Get Paid to Change the World. Now, I knew he kind of had this post in the queue, but I guess I just didn't realize that it was going to be as stratospheric as it has been. 327 comments so far, which is the most I've ever seen at ProBlogger. You know the stats on like Facebook likes and tweets and so forth, right?
Yeah, let me pull it up now. You know, I'm checking it like every 5 minutes just to
right.
see what it's doing. I'm obsessive about this stuff. Yeah, it's 1,795 tweets and 3,168 Facebook shares.
And this, of course, this is all just we called this just so we could brag about John's social media activity and a stellar posting record. But most importantly, and this is going to be really interesting because that post ran yesterday, correct?
Let's see. It was day before yesterday.
Okay. So you're seeing some of this. Google Analytics, which I'm going to assume you're using, runs a day behind. So most importantly, I imagine you're going to see a huge ton of traffic back to John's site, which is kind of the whole point of this call. If there's one guy who knows about going out and putting stuff out there at various specific targeted places in the web and specific targeted ways in order to generate huge amounts of traffic, it's John. So just a little bit of credibility there at the start. John, can you tell us, was the timing on this just really kind of coincidental, or did you know that this was going to time so well with a webinar on how to generate more traffic?
No, I didn't. It was coincidental. I mean, it's fortuitous to do a webinar about traffic where this is probably the highest traffic post I've ever written. I haven't talked to Darren about it in the past couple of days, but I think it may be the most popular post in the history of ProBlogger. Don't quote me on that, but I think it may be, which has been going how many years now? Like 7 years or something like that, 6 years? To be doing a call about traffic, it's good timing. But another point I just want to kind of make is you don't have to get this kind of traffic to be successful. I mean, to some extent, posts like this are an accident. If you had asked me how many tweets it would have gotten, I would have said, 1,000 tweets and 500 Facebook shares, which is still really popular. But I mean, even I didn't know how popular it would be. I'd be happy to talk about how to get that much traffic. A lot of bloggers are out there just asking the question, how do I get 100 visitors a day? Or how do I get that 1,000 visitors a day? And I think that's a question that you have to answer before you get up to a post that's gotten. I don't have any idea how much traffic this post has gotten. I would guess over 500,000 people by now, just to this one post. But you kind of have to go through this in levels. And I went through it in levels. I remember the first time I got to 100 visitors a day. And then when I got to 1,000 visitors a day. So that's what I'm hoping that we can help everybody do here on the webinar.
It reminds me of sort of the approach that says, let's stop worrying about making X amount per month or getting a handful, this many customers or something like that, and just work it on getting your first customer. Because I see that too. It's like, well, how do I get more traffic? And if you're looking at the numbers that you're playing with here or anything that's done by anybody with any degree of real blogging success, it seems really intimidating and unachievable, whereas the approach we're trying to take here is, let's assume that you're starting from that your traffic sucks, right? That's the whole point. Your traffic sucks. That's why you're here. And how do you make it not suck? It doesn't have to be like super stellar, amazing, off the charts sort of fantastic traffic, but how do you make it not suck? I.e., what, 100 a day is sort of your first stepping stone, you would say?
Yeah, and what's also funny is last week I was on a consulting call with a guy. And that kind of gave me the idea for this because I swear to God, he told me, I'm getting 2 visitors a day. And he said, at first I was telling myself, okay, well, at least that's something. You can convince 2 other people to read what you write. He said, but then somebody told me how to install Google Analytics. So I installed it on my blog, and I looked at the zip codes, and I found out one of the readers was me, and the other one was my mom, and my mom stopped reading 2 weeks ago. He said, that's why I decided to reach out for a consulting call, because it can't be any worse than that. When you're a beginner, it can be that way, and you're wondering, what the hell is going on? What am I doing wrong? It's a series of steps. When I was a beginning blogger, I went through the same thing. My first 3 blogs were absolute flops. Absolute flops.
What were they on, John, just so we can understand sort of the spectrum?
The first one was on high-level real estate investing. I mean, we're not talking about buying a house and fixing it up. we're talking about the intricacies of reverse amortization mortgages and double closings and all of these techniques that expert real estate investors use to make tons of money. And I figured, you know, there are millions of people out there interested in real estate investing. So I'm an expert on real estate investing. Why don't I start a blog? So I did this question and answer format. You know, what is a double closing and how can I use it? What are the advantages and disadvantages of reverse amortization mortgages? And I answered out the questions. And I did that for 3 months, and I wasn't getting any traffic. I wasn't making any money. I decided to start selling text link ads to try to make some money, and I got banned by Google.
Well, how did you get banned?
Well, at one time, I don't know if it's still like this now, but if you it had a thing that said ads by text link ads on it, and at one point, Google just took everyone selling text link ads out of the search engine. You just disappeared. I was a victim of my first, it wasn't like I was getting much traffic anyway. But that one flopped. The next one I started was about how to become a best-selling author. I mean, once again, everybody wants to write a book. Everybody wants to be a best-selling author. Why can't I build a hugely popular blog? So I started a blog called Bestseller Interviews, where I interviewed best-selling authors, asked them 10 questions, and posted the answers up. Absolutely flopped. As it turns out, you need to do just more than just interview best-selling authors to build a popular blog. And then I started another one about less high-level real estate, and that one didn't work either. It wasn't until my fourth blog that I started getting any traffic. And with that one, I was at like, I don't remember how fast I hit 100 visitors a day, but I hit 1,000 visitors a day within 30 days on that one. And I was up to 2,000 visitors a day within 60 days. Now, all of that was over a two-year period, maybe. If you're struggling right now, you know, you can feel like there's something wrong with you. That, you know, God hates you. There's a little cloud following you around. Nothing you do is ever going to work, and you're going to die invisible, broke, and ignored. But the reality is, I mean, the pathway for blogging is the same as anything else. It's 1 to 2 years of misery in most cases, followed by a huge aha where everything starts working, and then gradually getting, building it up to where every post you write goes viral, and you're one of the highest paid freelance writers in the world. It's taken me like, 5 or 6 years to get there. I have a little bit of compassion for people that are in that bottom spot. And another big problem I have is a lot of the advice that you read from popular bloggers, and every popular blogger has articles out there about how to get traffic. And you read them, and you see all of this advice, and you try to apply it, and it doesn't work. And that's because they're in a different stage than you are.
Right.
The things that we do at Copy Blogger and the things that a beginning blogger does are completely different. The majority of them have no relation to each other whatsoever. And so if I were to talk about what I'm doing to get traffic at CopyBlogger or ProBlogger, that has absolutely no relevance on what you're doing if you're starting with zero subscribers. And nobody knows that. Nobody tells you that. So I thought it would be cool to do a call talking about how to get started when you're at that bottom level.
My trajectory was, I guess it was similar in a way. It wasn't exactly the same. I had several unsuccessful pre-blogging efforts. And by pre-blogging, I mean I didn't know what the hell a blog was for a while and basically just tried doing my own little kind of newsletter, just sending it out to people, trying to get subscribers. It was a really sort of basic effort, and that kind of didn't go anywhere. And then I had this weird thing where my initial real blog was a site called TheEconomyIsn'tHappening.com, which was intended to just be a pure humor blog. And my strategy was going to be that I was going to, sell books, like I had a physical book, and maybe I would serialize a novel on that site or something that would be humor. And it was through some guest posts that, and I know that's a favorite strategy of yours, on ittybiz.com that I started getting a little more notoriety and launched a second blog called learntobeyourownva.com, VA standing for virtual assistant.
Mm-hmm.
Which is your person who manages your mailing list and so forth, if you choose to hire that out. And that was largely technical tips, and it was kind of dry, and I tried to inject a little bit of humor and a little bit of crassness and so forth into it, but I could only do so much because it was a how-to site. And then both of those were, I would say that they sort of ticked up a little bit, but they never were really truly successful. And when I saw my big jump was when I decided to combine the two and make johnnybetruant.com. So it's a little different in that I didn't have necessarily blogs that fizzled. It was more like I took two and those ceased to be, and a new one was born out of them. But all of it was built through guest posting on ittybiz.com to start, then had a few posts on a handful of other sites. I know I posted on Clay Collins' site before he got his new site. So it was like, I think I did the Project Mojave blog, and then he had another one. And I posted on Tim Brownson's site, adaringadventure.com, a few times, handful of other sites, and then eventually on ProBlogger and CopyBlogger. But it was all built through through guest posting and getting more people to acknowledge me. I mean, is that basically the trajectory that you took when you were starting out, or was it slightly different?
Yeah, no, mine was, I mean, when I finally took off, I was at a loss. So I actually hired Chris Garrett, who's the co-author of the ProBlogger book, and he runs Christy.com.
And he does not have any skills at Rock Band.
No.
It's widely
it's well
known.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, Chris Garrett, he was running this consulting offer, so I took him up on it. He looked at all of my writing and he said, "You know, you're not bad, but the problem is nobody knows who the hell you are. It's like, you know, you're over here in your own little corner doing your thing, but there's nobody around to see you. And if you want to be successful, you know, you can't sing out in the middle of the desert and expect to draw a crowd. You need to go where there's already a crowd and start and do your thing there." And he told me, you know, why don't you start doing some guest posts? Because the benefit of guest posting is there's already a blog there. There's already an audience there. The metaphor I like to give is like being the opening act for a famous band. Lots of bands start out being the opening act for another band. And the reason why is because the big band draws the audience. And it's a way of testing out that other band, getting them some experience performing, and letting them build their own following. Because it's not like the big band loses anything. If they like...
Did we lose John again? This happened last time. He's going to end up talking to his computer for a long time without having any knowledge that we aren't listening.
Can you hear me?
There he is. Okay, I was just about to say it was just like last time and you were going to talk for 20 minutes before realizing you were gone.
Just so you guys know, I'm in Mexico and communications here kind of suck.
Yes.
So if I fade in and out, just say something, Johnny, and I'll hang up and call back in or something.
We only lost about 10 seconds. Your connection is a little grainy, though. I don't know what that is.
Can you hear me okay now? I could call in from another line.
It's a little grainy. I would try and call in. Why don't you try and call in, and I'll I have something to say about what you were just saying. You just call right back in.
Okay, I'll call back in.
Okay. So John is advocating John is all about guest blogging, and John actually has a course called Guest Blogging, which should give you some idea of why it is that he's all about guest blogging. But so am I, and this is something that I pretty much always recommend to clients, and the big question, and this is the one that I'm going to spring on John when he gets back, because John is known in copy blogger circles as the king of mean, i.e. he doesn't pull punches. He will just go ahead and tell you really what he thinks, which is ultimately a favor for, you don't want to be coddled, you want to be told the truth. And the question that I'm going to have for John, because I never know how to answer this myself, is you can't get a guest posting job if you suck. So the question is going to be, how do you determine whether your lack of traffic is due to, as Chris Garrett told him, the fact that people might not know who you are yet, and that with some exposure you might sort of blossom and be loved by many people, versus the idea that you might just not be any good. And I think that the first part of the answer to that question is that you'll kind of never know until you're on some sort of a public stage. If you're over in your own little corner of the web and you're just blogging along without any exposure, without any getting on as the opening act of a band or something like that, as John was giving that metaphor, then you'll kind of never know because nobody's there to read you. And the lack of comments, lack of retweets and so forth is just from a general lack of traffic. And that may be because people have run across you and don't like you, or it could just be that nobody has run across you. So the general strategy of going out and getting on that metaphorical stage of another band, so to speak, and I think of this as grabbing somebody else's microphone, somebody who already has an established audience. So for me, my first really big guest posts were on ittybiz.com, and John mentioned the way that he went about it. Until you do that, you're never really going to know whether your writing is any good. I wish he'd hurry and get back on here because I want to ask him that question. But in essence, that's the strategy that I would always advocate that people try, is craft a post that works for another blog and ultimately try and get it in front of some other people so that you can be tested, in essence, rather than just sort of going off into the void. I think I'm just going to kind of hang in here because I'm surprised it's taking him this long to call back in. That's the downside of living in paradise, I suppose, is the fact that you don't always have good communication. You there, John Boy? Just in time.
Hey, I'm back.
I had run out of things to say. It's okay. It's pretty good. We can hear you fine. I just run out of things to say anyway, so I was getting to the point where I was like, okay, well, what the hell do I say now? So here was my question that I was sort of asking rhetorically and was saying that I was going to ask you when you got back on. And that is this. So if somebody doesn't have very good traffic, how do you know whether it's a lack of exposure? So if they were to get onto, if they were to land a guest posting gig or two and begin to talk to people, that they might catch on. And how do you know when it's, I mean, let's be honest, maybe they suck, you know? Like, how do you make that determination? Because the recommendation that somebody should go and do guest posting is really only going to work if once they're given that audition in front of the, as the opening act, that they perform well.
Yeah, and I still think the answer is guest posting, and the reason why is because other bloggers will tell you if you suck. So if you propose a guest post to Copy Blogger, and Sonia comes back and she says, this isn't for us, and you ask her why, and she says, well, it's just really not that good, then you know you have some work to do. And especially if you do that for 5 different big blogs, and all of them reject you, then you know that you need to work on your writing. And, you know, you'll be tempted to believe that, well, I do what I do, and nobody appreciates what I do. But usually that's not the case. What nobody tells you when you start doing a blog, because there's no blogger manual, is that there's a way to write your content that gets traffic, and pretty much nothing else works. And the bloggers that have gotten successful, all of them use the same principles. And if you submit a post to them and they can't see that in your writing, then most of them will tell you. And on the flip side, if you can get accepted to those blogs, if they all say, sure, this is good, and they run it and you get good traffic, then that probably means you have the opposite problem, that your content is good, but just nobody knows who you are. And, you know, being rejected is not a bad thing. My first guest post to Copy Blogger was rejected. Brian turned it down. I think his exact words were, I can't publish this. So it's one of those things where I asked him why, and I said, well, because if I remember correctly, the name of the post was The Pinky and the Brain Guide to Dig. And I compared Dig, being popular on Dig, to blowing spit bubbles, which may or may not have been accurate. but it was like 3 paragraphs long. It was offensive to everyone who reads Dig. And it had no explanation of exactly how to use that principle to write popular posts. And what he could have said, if he wanted to be mean, was, you haven't been reading the blog, you haven't been paying attention. There's a way that we write our content that works. And if you want to succeed, you need to follow the model. And I think that's one of the big mistakes that a lot of bloggers make, is they think that good writing, you know, something that their English teacher in high school would have approved of, is enough to make them popular. What popular bloggers do, every single one of them I know, is they find a blogger to model. And they kind of watch what that person does. And then they learn why they're successful. And you can kind of see the influences. Like, when I look at you, Johnny, I see a lot in Naomi Dunford influence. Was she one of your models?
I think that Naomi and I clicked because we were similar. I don't know that – I mean, I definitely took a lot of her advice and so forth in business and marketing. But as far as the writing and the way that I structure my posts, I don't feel like I've consciously modeled anyone. So, there, of course, you just gave a point and I just said, well, I didn't do that. But I what I have done is if I submit a post to – I guess I do it subconsciously. I'm the kind of guy who – if I'm around somebody long enough and they have an accent that's different from mine, I will pick it up, and I do that with speech patterns and so forth. And so I think that in the same vein, I have subconsciously done what you've just suggested doing deliberately. So while I don't feel that I took that I modeled Naomi or that I've modeled anyone else, I will say that my posts that appeared on ItiBiz were very Naomi, and my posts that appear on CopyBlogger are very copy blogger. I was going to say Brian, but if anybody knows Brian, Brian and copy blogger, there's a little bit of dissonance between the copy blogger brand and how Brian is personally. But that said, my copy blogger posts, it's not that they're I mean, one of the things that I'm known for is being kind of crass and swearing, although I was going to say I've been doing that less recently, but I've had some real profanity-laced posts recently. So I guess that's not true. But that's the way that I wrote on ItiBiz, is very much in your face and being kind of profane and borderline and maybe a little insulting sometimes in hopefully a fun way. But then when I write on CopyBlogger, it's not that I'm deliberately trying to be clean or anything like that, but I adopt the tone of CopyBlogger because this is something that I've always known as a you know, I used to write freelance magazine articles, and one of the cardinal rules is know the publication, which is exactly what you were implying that Brian said to you. You didn't know the blog. And if you want to write a post for Popular Mechanics, you'd better have read a hell of a lot of Popular Mechanics so that you understand the way that their posts are structured. And that's the same thing that I do. My posts that I write for ProBlogger, I haven't written a ton, but I've written a few, they're actually subtly different from the posts that I write for CopyBlogger, and it's nothing that I can put a finger on except to say that the post has to fit the publication, and not in a whoring your talent sort of a way, not in a way where you are being less of who you are so that it can fit into somebody else's mold, but in order to be received by the audience that you are guest posting for, and to be maximally effective as a traffic generator or a persuader or making yourself seen as an expert or anything like that, you have to speak in a language that those people understand, if that makes any sense. And one of the things that I've done – but let me just say one more thing, John, because I want to ask you about this. My question is – how much personality, because we did this the call a couple of weeks ago on sort of your voice and personality, and that was a lot of fun. But how much of your personality and your distinctness do you bring to a guest post? I mean, I think I bring a pretty fair amount, and I try to push some boundaries while still staying within the lines. But what do you advocate for people, and what do you do?
Well, I bring a lot now. But back when I was a beginner, I copied. I mean, now I have my own style. And I think that's something you grow into. I mean, most people don't discover their style from day one. I mean, for me, it took me several years to kind of develop my own unique style.
Me too.
And that's where I think modeling those bloggers has, I mean, you retain those influences. Like with me, I still have, I mean, I'm a copy blogger headline aficionado. I mean, copy blogger is huge on magazine-style headlines. And I'll probably carry that with me forever, that I'll write magazine-style headlines. And the reason why I say that I see a lot of Naomi in your work is the storytelling. Naomi does a ton more storytelling than like Copy Blogger does, for instance, and the personality and things like that. And usually whenever you're writing for those blogs, just by modeling the style, it teaches you to do things when you're writing. And I think a lot of that is subconscious. One of the things that I read in, or heard, rather, in an old Gary Halbert copywriting conference. I don't even know if you know who Gary Halbert is.
I do not.
Gary Halbert, he's dead now. But at one time, he was the most successful copywriter that ever lived. He wrote a letter that was mailed like 1 billion times. It was literally mailed to the phone book. It made money regardless of where it was sent. And he did a ton of work for other companies. Sadly, he passed away a while back, but I think it was like 2003 or something. But Gary said in a conference that I heard that you, when you're a beginner, you need to take successful pieces that other people have written and actually rewrite them. Actually rewrite it word for word, because it trains your subconscious to do the successful things that they do, and you end up doing those things without even knowing it. So when I was a beginner, I would purposefully emulate paragraph for paragraph Brian's posts. And I would even go back and take, like, Seth Godin's posts and rewrite them just to try to get his cadence and his style and what made it unique. And when you're doing that, it teaches you how to do certain things that you don't even realize that it's doing. Sonia, when she was beginning with Remarkable Communication back before Copy Blogger, Sonia Simone, she did the same thing with Seth Godin. I think when you're a beginner, learning those other things that successful bloggers do. And what I'm saying is, earlier I said, okay, don't copy their traffic strategies. But now I'm telling you to copy their writing style. So it's like, you know, what the hell is going on? Should you copy? Should you not copy? And the distinction is, don't copy their promotional strategies, but do copy their content strategies. And I'm not saying you have to stick with them. You might try on several different styles and see which works for you and which gets you traffic, because there are some people that if I tried to write like them, I'm not sure I could do it convincingly. For example, I don't think I could write exactly like Naomi. Well, what I do is more similar to what Brian does and what, like Seth Godin does. But I do think it's important to find someone whose style kind of resonates with you and kind of model what they do. All the way to the point of, if you take some of my posts, and most people never realize this, but my On Dying Mothers and Fighting for Your Ideas post, which is one of the most popular I've ever written, that is modeled directly after Brian's
the snowboard one. Is that the one? Okay.
Yeah, the snowboard, the subdural hematoma, and the secret of life. Now, for one, look at the headlines. On Dying Mothers and Fighting for Your Ideas. The snowboard, the subdural hematoma, and the secret of life. Three parts, to the headlines. So it's the same headline formula. If you look at the opening, Brian was talking about something like the pool of blood pressed precariously against my brain. I mean, you could tell how well I know the post. I can practically quote it word for word because I copied it. Now, you can't tell that if you put the two posts side by side. None of the words are the same, but the structure is exactly the same. And getting those structures ingrained in your unconscious mind is one of the most important things you can do for writing compelling content. Another thing that happened with me, and another reason why I recommend doing guest posting, is you basically get trained for free. For like 2 years, I sent posts to Copyblogger. Brian would edit them and then post them. And he told me, print them out, put them side by side, and compare the two versions word for word and look at what I changed. And I got to do that with Brian for 2 years. Now, you can't buy Brian's time to do something like that. But when he was still running Copyblogger on a day-to-day basis and editing all of the posts, he edited all my posts for free. And I could sit there and compare the two. And in the beginning, he was rewriting like 50% of the post. And I would sit there and I would look at the two and I would say, okay, why did he change this? And I would think about it. And sometimes I'd figure out, sometimes I would ask him. But I would actually, and this would take me, by the way, 2 to 3 hours of sitting and comparing the posts. But after, you know, I did that, and after a while, he was only rewriting a third of it. Then after a while, he was only rewriting 10% of it. And now it's to the point where he doesn't change anything. Hardly anybody does. And the reason why is I learned from those changes. And if you're writing guest posts on a regular basis, that's one of the most valuable learning experiences you can get. I have a degree in English literature, and I learned more about writing from those 2 years of doing that with Brian than I did in 4 years at college. I swear to God. I mean, it's not even close. Because you're getting mentored by, if these blogs are already popular with 50,000 plus readers that you're writing for, then those people know what it takes, and they're teaching you how to write for free. So if you're just good enough, I mean, don't feel like you have to be great. Most bloggers, if the topic is good, it's on a subject their audience will enjoy, and they generally agree with the content, and it's at least written okay, they'll take it, they'll modify it, fix it up, and publish it for you. And then you can compare the two. So that's all I learned.
Well, what I think you're saying here, just to put maybe a finer point on it, and this is something I could honestly get up on a soapbox about, is that writing, and I'm going to say something that's incredibly obvious here, writing is a craft. And I think that a lot of people think, in the way that the blogosphere works, that if you have something to say and you feel that the idea itself has merit, a lot of people think that that's kind of all that it takes. And while it's important to have an idea and it's important to have good content, that the writing, the craft of writing, is still important regardless of the format. So by having this sort of mentorship that you can have through a guest post where you submit a version, if they'd agree to publish it, then you can look at the two side by side. One of the things that John, one of his strengths, one of his many strengths is, and I guess I'm talking to other people, but I'm talking about you, whatever. One of your strengths is the unflinching willingness to do as much work as it takes. And whether it's spending hours agonizing over a headline or the phrasing of something within a post itself, or taking two posts and setting them side by side and comparing them word for word over 2 hours. It's studying your craft. And that's what a lot of what we're talking about here is part of it is the idea, and part of it is doing what it takes through, you know, a quasi-mentorship by submitting guest posts and so forth, to develop a way to deliver it that it's compelling in the writing. And that is one way to do it. And another, what I was talking about subconsciously sort of absorbing the voice of a blog and making sure it fits, a lot of that just comes down to, if you want to post on a certain blog, read that blog, like, compulsively. The way that I, like, if the longer I read something, the more that, just by the virtue of the way that I'm wired, the more that my prose, my, or whatever, comes out sounding like that other person. That's like unconscious mimicry. Like, if I read a Chuck Palahniuk book like Fight Club, then suddenly I'm writing in first person present tense. And I think that if you want to post on, you know, let's pick on the popular guys, because might as well, if you want to post on Copyblogger, the more you read those posts, which have been usually guest written by a lot of different people, but honed by the Copyblogger staff to fit the Copyblogger tone and so forth, then you're going to have a feel for that, and you're going to write that way more automatically. And if it's less automatic for you, then you do what John's talking about. But I think that the emphasis on that writing is still a craft and deserves some attention is worth mentioning. I mean, do you agree?
Yeah, it is. And, you know, the more serious you are about it, the more traffic you'll get. I mean, the reason why, I think it's up to, over the last year, I think all but one post that I've written has gone viral, which is insane.
How are you defining viral, by the way?
Over 1,000 tweets, and let's say over 100,000 visitors. Part of the reason why, and there's no other writer I know of, and here I am bragging, there's no other writer I know of who consistently gets those kind of results. But there are two reasons why. One is, I spent years of working on this and studying with, I mean, most people agree Brian Clark is one of the true geniuses of the industry. So getting to work one-on-one with him for 2 years is priceless. And also, I mean, I spend more time than anyone else on my posts. The whole idea that you can write a quality blog post in 30 minutes that gets that kind of traffic is very unrealistic. Occasionally it might happen by accident, but if you want your writing to be really popular, I mean, on the ProBlogger post that just went up on ProBlogger, I spent more than 20 hours on that post. 20 hours. And people say, you know, my God, how can you justify putting that much time into a blog post? Well, it pays off. It's gotten all of that traffic. I've gotten over 1,000 subscribers to my email list from that post this week. Just from the click-throughs on the byline, I picked up several hundred Twitter followers, even though I didn't even have a Twitter link in there. And based on the leads to my guest blogging class, I'll probably make about $25,000 to $50,000 just off of the leads to that one post. So you can say, realistically, that I got paid $25,000 to write that post. That's more than $1,000 an hour. So, yeah, it's worth it. And if you want...
The number you have dialed is not in service. Please check the number to try again.
Okay, so we're doing really... Oh, are you still there, John?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay, I thought we lost you. Did you hear that message? Okay, well, whatever. I thought we'd lost you, but we didn't, so go ahead.
Yeah, it's high level. I mean, I'm not saying that you need to spend 20 hours on your poster right now. But I will say you need to be spending at least, if you're writing for a big audience especially, you need to be spending at least 2 to 5. I'm not saying that every great post is written in 5 hours, but the majority of them are. And it's just a warning sign. If you're spending only 30 minutes to an hour on your post, you're probably not being serious enough about your craft. And the question that comes off of that is, so how, you know, I'm busy, I've got a job, I've got kids, how am I supposed to spend 5 hours on every blog post and post every day? And the answer is you're not. In my opinion, that's one of the most heinous myths ever propagated in the blogging field, is that you need to post every day. The real answer to that question is you need to post as often as you can be awesome. If you can write an awesome post every day, then go for it. Most people can't unless they're doing it full time. If you're working a job and you've only got, like, let's say 10 hours a week, what most people can manage is one really great post on their blog every week and one guest post, like, every week or two, which is about what most people can manage. And what's surprising is that can actually increase your traffic, because the difference in traffic between a mediocre post and a good one is exponential. Even if your blog is brand new, if you're not getting, like, let's say, 1,000 visitors for every post you publish, then your content probably isn't up to where it needs to be. You're not working hard enough. You know, if you spend, so, I mean, you got to look at it that way. Would I rather spend 30 minutes to get 2 visitors, one of which is my mother, or would I rather spend 3 hours and get 1,000? If you divide it out by visitors per hour, then the 3 hours is a better investment. So when you're looking at time, I think that's the better way to judge. I look at visitors per hour and tweets per hour. On CopyBlogger, I average about 100 tweets an hour invested into a post. It's almost like eerie. If I spend 5 hours on a post, it gets 500 tweets. If I spend 10 hours on a post, it gets 1,000 tweets. I don't know if it's the same way for everybody, but usually there is some sort of correlation. The big points there are: pay attention to your craft, invest some time into getting good, and also don't feel like you have to write every day. You just need to publish as often as you can publish something really good. How many times are you publishing, like, per week on average right now, Johnny?
One. Only one?
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's because of exactly what you said. I wouldn't have thought of that, but a lot of times it comes on me that the idea occurs to me that, wow, I haven't published this week, or it's been a few days or something. And so I get this thought that I should publish. And I haven't been guest posting a lot recently. I was telling you in an email earlier that I need to get back to that because I want to. But just on my blog, it's been like I start to get that itch, and then I realize, but I don't really kind of have anything to say, and I try not to get into that trap where I just put out a post because I feel I need to get out a post. And I've done that a few times recently. There was a post or two that I'm thinking of in the past several months where I just kind of needed to get a post out. I felt that way because I was under that impression that you need to post something every so often. And so I would just dash something off. And I always kind of regret it because I can just kind of hear it fall flat. Like nobody seems to really care about it. And it's almost like you said, I kind of maybe shouldn't have even wasted my time. So the post that I wrote today took me quite a while to write. It's it actually plays off of John's post, go figure, and about my own decision to basically, I decided to drop my health insurance basically because, and you can read the post if you're curious on johnnybetruant.com, but the point is it was just screwing me up. And I think that was a pretty good post. And it took me a long time to write, but I'm trying to discipline myself to only post when I feel I have something good to say that I can wrap a good post around. But it averages out to once a week.
Yeah, one of the things I like to tell my students is a post only does you any good if it gets traffic. When you're a beginning blogger. Because if you don't have a lot of subscribers, if you're in the pre-1,000 subscriber stage, I mean, that means not a lot of people are listening to what you're writing. You don't really have a group of raving fans who will go out and talk about and promote every post you write. The only hope you have is getting a link. That's the only hope you have. If you don't get a link, then the post might as well have never been written. Because no one will ever find it, no one will ever read it, and it will have been a total waste of your time. That's a really uncomfortable thing to realize, but it's true. I mean, you could argue that, well, maybe, you know, one person will find it that really needs it, and so that makes it worth it. And that could be true. But if you're looking at it pragmatically, if you're looking at it from a perspective of growing your blog, then in the beginning, links are one of the only things that matters. And another harsh reality to deal with, another hard thing to get to grips with, is that for the most part, people with the big audiences, they link to the people they know, they already know, and they already like. I'm not saying you can't get a link from a big blogger you don't know, but put yourself in their shoes for a minute. You've got all of this traffic. You probably are getting pitched 10 to 20 posts a day at least for people that want you to link to it. And you can't possibly link to it all, and you don't even want to sit there and read it all because 70% of it is crap. So about, you know, the majority of those pitches that people send you, you don't even read them because you're busy and you don't have time. But if you get a pitch from somebody you know that says, hey, will you tweet this for me? Or will you link to this from your blog, then your chances of getting that link go up astronomically. It's not guaranteed, but just them knowing you gets you a chance. And it's the same for every popular blogger, every social media power user. And so the question is, how do you get to know them? How do you become one of that inside group that you pay attention to? And the best way I know of to do it, which is why I teach a class on it, is guest blogging. Because there's not a whole lot of things popular bloggers need. They don't need more money, usually. They don't need extra friends. They're not lonely. You know, they don't need you to wash their car. There's not a lot you can offer them, but one thing that almost all popular bloggers need is content. I think it was, it's either Brian or Sonia that started it, calling it feeding the beast. When you've got 100,000 or more readers sitting there, it's like a stadium full of people waiting for you to say something. And if you don't come out there today and say something brilliant, then they leave. So every day you've got to come out there and put on a show. And it's tiring. So a lot of bloggers, big blogs, they start accepting guest posts because they can't sustain going out there and putting on a show all the time on their blogs. So they bring along other talented people who can. And if you can become one of those people that gives them a post so that they can take the day off, I mean, one of the most telling tweets that I've ever seen on Twitter, when Darren Rouse of ProBlogger was about to go on vacation, he said, editing guest posts, for every two I get done, I get to take another day off. And if I were a beginning blogger in that situation, I would have sent him two posts and say, have another day on me. Now, if you did that, if you gave him another day of vacation, how much more likely do you think he would be to tweet your post the next time you ask him to do one? I mean, it's good content is really the only thing those bloggers need. And so by providing that to them, I mean, if you look at the stats, and this isn't only true, this is true in the personal finance niche, the tech niche, the parenting niche, the writing niche, every niche that I know of out there operates this way. So because bloggers get overwhelmed, they have to choose, and so therefore they choose the people who they owe favors to or who they like. And the best way to get your foot in the door is to start writing those guest posts.
So, John, at this point, we probably should look. Do you have a question queue? Has anybody asked any questions of us? Or should we open lines?
Let's see what we got here. Let's do this. If you'd like to, hit star 2 on your phone. And I'll unmute you. We'll also go through a few of the questions in the questions queue. But I want to reward the people who called in here. Let's see. So you got to hit star 2 on your phone there. While we're waiting for that, I guess we'll go ahead and do one from the question queue here. One interesting comment from Derek Halpern here. He said he posts once or twice a month, and since January he's built a list approaching 5,000 people. So there you go.
Mm-hmm.
That's evidence. Men with Pens is another example. James Chartrand, when they went to one post a week, if I remember correctly, their traffic tripled. So the more I write, the more traffic I get. When your blog gets really big, to some extent that's true. But in the beginning, there's almost no correlation whatsoever.
Well, and it's quality over quantity. I mean, if you can deliver a blockbuster post every day, then maybe that's true, but most people can't.
Yeah, no, most people can't. I can't.
I can't either.
So, and yeah, some people, I mean, some like Vito Babauta, he can do like 5 a day. I don't know how he does it. I mean, he's like an alien or something. But that's why Zen Habits is one of the biggest blogs in the world. is because he's superhuman. Let's see, one of the other questions here. Is the traffic John got from this post being sent to Copyblogger, or does he have his own site? I actually linked to Copyblogger and I linked to my guest blogging class, which is a, if you go to guestblogging.com, that's the landing page. If you signed up to this call, you're automatically signed up for those videos, by the way. But the, I have no idea how much traffic Copyblogger got. I could ask Brian, I guess. But that's another point that a lot of people miss with guest blogging. They write a post, and then they say, I only got a few hundred visitors, and none of them subscribed. And I say, well, what did you link to? And they say, well, I linked to my homepage. And I say, well, that's why. One of the best things you can do is create a landing page on your blog specifically for that audience and then give them a reason to subscribe to your blog. And, you know, if you have a free report or something, you can give them that in exchange for subscribing. Or if you have an interview, you can give them that. Or even if you don't have anything, just create a landing page and at the bottom of it say, you know, I'm glad you really enjoyed my post. Before you click away and start reading the other posts on the blog, do me a favor and go ahead and subscribe here. If you do nothing more than that, you'll convert like 20 to 30% of the people that click through to subscribers to your blog. So if you get, you know, if you're writing for a fairly big blog, and you get 500 visitors from it, from the guest post, then that's 100 subscribers minimum you should be picking up. If you create, like, a landing page with a bribe of videos or interviews or something really irresistible, you should be getting 60 to 70%. So if you got, you know, 500 visitors, you should be picking up, like, 300 or 400 subscribers. So that's another big tip. Let's see if we've got any, no, we got no hands raised. If you guys want to talk live on the line, hit star 2, and you can ask us a question live. Patrick says, seems like the majority of small businesses that blog never get enough traffic to make it worthwhile. The learning curve for blogging is awfully steep for most mom-and-pop shops, and blogging is one of the 100 things on their to-do list. Do you always think every business should blog, given the workload? No, I don't. And that's a very controversial stance to take. There are two ways to get customers. You either trade time or you trade money. If you're already making money, it's a better idea for most small businesses to spend money on advertising, to hire a copywriter, or to hire someone to do the blogging for them. If you're not making any money, you can't afford any advertising, you can't afford to hire anybody, and all you have is time, then, yeah, blogging might be a good idea. What's your answer to that, Johnny?
I think that sometimes the advice to blog for a lot of businesses is really kind of like the one-size-fits-all mentality, and maybe in a lot of cases, I don't know that totally fits. So, for instance, when Patrick said all businesses, I'm taking that pretty literally. So the mom-and-pop hardware store down the street here, I don't think that there's any point in them blogging. Now, I do think you could make an argument for could they benefit from blogging? Well, I suppose they could if they worked at it hard enough and they could get some traction off of blogging. But I think that the model of a neighborhood hardware store is if there's enough foot traffic coming in, then I think you're probably okay. So for me, I'm a little bit more on the side of less. I think that in a lot of the information products and marketing and people who obviously do a lot of business online, I think that most businesses that do business primarily online to begin with and already have their feet in this market, I think could definitely benefit from blogging. But for a lot of brick-and-mortar folks to add it feels a little off to me in a lot of cases.
Yeah, and if you're not a – blogging is also something that's available, you know, to the world. Most businesses I know that have gotten good results from it, they have a national or an international audience. You know, if you're only serving people in, you know, Paducah, Idaho, I don't even know if that's a town. Probably not. I hope not.
Yeah. Idaho. It's probably where it is if it's Paducah.
But, you know, if you're serving them and you're a window washer, probably not going to get you that much. I mean, you could go into the Google keyword tool and see how many people are searching for Paducah window washer. And if there are, you could probably rank on the first page with or without a blog. But blogging is great. Also, it tends to be better, I think, for consumer markets than B2B markets. I'm not saying you can't make it work in a B2B market, but most of the consumer-oriented markets or even blogging around a particular product for sale, too, is usually a bad idea. I mean, if you're blogging about Apple's latest products, maybe you could build a popular blog, but usually people don't want to read sales copy every day. They want to read how-to advice, you know, interesting stories. And if you occasionally pitch them...
They want to read something that is all of ultimate benefit to them. Not just, you know, pounding on the chest and so forth. I mean, that's the thing. If you're talking about yourself, I think this is advice that a lot of people who have the stereotype blog where they're just talking about their cat. Like, the reason that nobody cares about your cat blog is because nobody cares about your cat. If it has some relevance to them, if it's, you know, cat grooming tips or something, that's the thing. You have to offer the reader something, whether it's – unless your stories about your cat are just really, really funny, you know, and just really awesome and entertaining of themselves. But this, like, journal format where you're just talking about your day and here's my journey and so forth, I just don't think that goes anywhere when you see blogs like that because it's just what's in it for the reader.
Yeah, the – there are a couple things that I've tried with my clients that work. I definitely don't recommend this long term, but one of the exercises I do with people that are totally focused on what they think and what they're doing, I say write all of your blog posts this month and never use the word I or my, ever. And the
Wait,
most
John,
popular,
can you repeat
I mean, the
that
most,
because... Could you repeat that, John, because it got a little garbled there and I didn't hear exactly what you said.
Yeah, the exercise that I tell people to do, and just qualifying it here, this isn't something you should do forever, but it's a good thing to practice because it'll change the way you think about writing, is for all of your blog posts 1 month, write them without using the words I or my at all. And the most common word in your post should be you. If you'll do that, you'll probably see your traffic go up. just from doing that, if you're writing about your readers instead of you, usually that in itself will create a big increase in traffic. Now, once you get better and you get good at storytelling, like you're awesome at storytelling, Johnny, then you can start telling stories that are really interesting and then explaining how that applies to your readers. But that takes some practice. And if you're not getting it quite right, err on the side of talking more about your readers than yourself. The other thing I'd like to recommend, and this goes into choosing your topic for your blog. If you're not sure, you know, am I writing about the right thing? What should my blog be about? One of the things that's immensely educational is go to the magazine rack and look at what the magazines are about. And look at the titles of the magazine. Magazines target, most of them target audiences. Like the really big one, they target audiences instead of people. Either audiences or obsessions. Like Entrepreneur Magazine. You know, if you're going down the aisle, there's no big question what Entrepreneur Magazine is about. You know, if you're an entrepreneur, you buy Entrepreneur Magazine. It's that simple. The same thing for Pro Blogger, to give a blogging example. If you want to be a professional blogger, you read Pro Blogger. There's no mystery what it's about. You know, Smart Money. It's about personal finance, which isn't an audience, but it's something people get obsessed with. There are a large number of people who think and read about personal finance on a daily basis, which is, you know, the good version of obsession. So you either want to pick an audience that's large in number and talk about everything they're interested in, or you want to pick an obsession that a lot of people have, which would be, you know, things like scrapbooking and, I don't know, what's another example, Johnny?
I don't know. I'm drawing a blank.
Scrap marketing. I mean, people read about marketing, blogging, social media,
right.
Gadgets, productivity tips. You know, a lot of people are obsessed with productivity
fitness.
Tips.
Fitness. Diet, yeah.
Yeah, and a good thing to do is to look at the things you read, the things you're obsessed with, and start a blog about that, or at least something related to that. You don't have to, but generally, if there's already a publication of some sort about a certain topic or about a certain group of people, then it's probably a topic that's successful enough for a blog. And if you're reading it, like, on a regular basis, then it means you have enough long-term interest in it to keep writing about it.
John, do we have I could probably do one more question. Is there anybody who's raised their hand or any more in the queue?
Let's see.
Silent group today.
Yeah, we do have a silent group today. No one with their hand raised, but I guess we will. We've got a few more in the queue here. Any tips on SEO? It's very time-consuming, but it's worth it. What do you think? I've already heard you have some pretty strong opinions on this, Johnny. You want to?
John and I talked about this on the call that we did with the Black Sheep Bloggers call. If anybody wants that, is that still up, John? Maybe they could email one of us and ask about it. I mean, I'll give my answer. But the in general, this is up to preference, and I'm not going to pretend that this is the right answer because I don't think there is a right answer. But I'm not a fan of SEO. I'm kind of vocal about it. And the reason is because SEO brings you undifferentiated traffic. So, for instance, if I am a marketer, I think that I don't know that you would niche me as a marketer, but let's just pretend that I am, that for the sake of, let's say that marketing about chickens is my niche. It's not actually, for anybody who doesn't know me. Let's just pretend that, because that's like a sort of thing somebody might search for. Then I could get a ton of traffic for like marketing for chickens, and they would have no idea who I am. They just wanted to know about the topic that I happen to write about. And so they're going to come to my site, and they're not going to have any exposure to me. And the way that I work is, it's kind of hard to describe because we're doing it out of context, but I want a pure distillation of sort of my folks, because those are the people that are repeat customers who talk about you, who are loyal to you, the people you form a relationship with. They buy everything that you sell eventually, or they speak favorably about you. And that's what the relationship that I'm trying to build. So if anybody is ever going to hire me for something, specifically thinking of money in this case and not just building subscribership, I want them exposed to me in advance. I want them vetted. So I'm not a fan of optimizing for SEO, and I feel that a guest post is a great way of drawing in traffic through the force of your personality if you're able to do what we were saying before by crafting a post that fits on the other blog, but that also infuses your personality and your unique style and your unique take on something. So I don't bother with SEO. I think that it is great for some folks. It is not great for me. If you're a cabinet maker and you sell cabinet plans, then I think it's great to optimize, because people are going to search for cabinet plans, and they're going to come to your site, and they're going to read your blog, and they're going to buy your stuff, and that's great. But for me, it's kind of hard to pin me down in one area anyway, and so if I optimize for one term and people are coming to me for that term, they're just going to bounce off anyway. I mean, in the context of this discussion, where do you come down on that, John?
And the other thing about SEO, I absolutely agree with everything you say there. The other thing about it, too, is when you're a beginning blogger and you're not getting any links or traffic, it's not going to happen anyway. You're not going to get ranked, because the big thing that everyone misunderstands about SEO is to rank for a popular term, terms that are getting any worthwhile traffic, they're competitors. And Google ranks the competitors not according to how well you optimize your keywords. That only determines what word or what list they put you in. But to determine how high on the list you are is all about the quality of the links you're getting. And for the really popular terms, I don't know what the exact metric probably varies, but I've heard people say that the big SEO guys, that one link from a high-quality blog is worth 10,000 links from no-name sites, that it's not even close. And I've seen it myself. I mean, in the video series that you're going to receive, there's a video in there about how to get your blog to the first page of Google. And if you're guest blogging, that actually happens automatically if you do it right. There's a case study in there about how Glenn Alsop, he got ranked for the first page of Personal Development, which gets like 350,000 searches a month on Google, by writing like 12 guest posts. That's it. And the reason why is that he was guest posting for really well-known, trusted blogs, and he linked back to his blog with the term that he wanted to rank for. Just 12 links put him on the first page. So that tells you how important. It's no longer on the first page because he sold the site and they've messed it up and stuff like that. But I actually have a screenshot on there where he's ranked like number 6. That's from a while back. So, you know, SEO, you know, search engine optimization, you can't optimize your way into a top ranking. And if you do, Google is probably, if you figure out a way to game the algorithm some way and, like, get, you know, a million spammy links and get up to the top, Google's algorithm changes constantly to weed out sites like that. So one day you'll just disappear. The best way to do SEO is just to get high-quality links. That's it. I mean, that's like 95% of it. Other than that, you know, put your keyword in the title tag of your homepage. If you do those two things and maybe think about the keywords in your headlines a little bit, and also the post name.
Description or?
Which, like,
it's permalinks.
Copyblogger.com/marketing. Oh, what's that called? I don't know why I'm just drawing a blank on it all.
Permalink.
The
permalink.
But anyway.
Right?
Yeah, the permalink. Your permalink matters a little bit. Your title tag matters a little bit. But, like, 90% of it is the links. If you just focus on, number one, writing high-quality content and building relationships on your site, that will happen. But really, guest posting, too. When you guest post, you get part of the trade is that they link back to your blog. So let's say I was going to start a blog on real estate investing today. I would go to a personal finance site like Get Rich Slowly, and I would write a post that had something to do with some aspect of real estate. And I would put a link in my byline down at the bottom that said, if you enjoyed this post, click here to get John's tips on real estate investing. And then real estate investing would be the link. I don't know how many posts it would take, but if I went to all of the big personal finance blogs and wrote for them, which is something I could do, then I could get ranked on the first page of real estate investment. At one time, I sold it, but at one time a while back, I actually built a site that was ranked number 2 on Google for real estate investment, which is a pretty popular keyword. And
yeah,
it was all high-quality links. So, I mean, I'll agree with you. Number one, search engine traffic isn't as nice as you think it is. Because people have no connection to you. Also, another big secret, most popular blogs, SEO traffic, I mean, and I've seen the traffic stats for a lot of really big blogs. On average, it's like 5 to 10% of their traffic. Even the ones that are optimized perfectly and are really popular blogs. And when you're coming up, you'll be lucky if it's 0.5% of your traffic. So in my opinion, you know, don't focus on it at all in the beginning. Focus on getting those really high quality links, writing great content. And the reason why, if you're wondering, guys, why we're talking so much about guest posting, when you have less than 1,000 subscribers, it's the best traffic strategy there is. And the reason why is because it trains you to do the two things. I mean, I talked about how writing for these big blogs taught me how to be a better writer. It does that. It will teach you how to be a better writer. And you'll be able to write better content for your blogs. Also, you will accumulate favors. So when you ask for a link, you'll get it. And just to give you guys some metrics, a copy blogger post may send back on average, I don't know, 500 to 1,000 visitors on the byline link. A tweet from copy blogger sends back, like, the last time I got one to a client site, it was like 6,000. So the tweet sends, like, anywhere from 5 to 10 times more traffic than the guest post. But the way that you get the tweet is to do the guest post first. And an actual link, the last time when I started my guest blogging class and I linked to it from Copy Blogger, I got 1,500 subscribers. That's not even visitors, that's subscribers. Now, I would have never gotten that link if I wasn't a regular contributor and one of the most popular writers on the site. So if you find what you want to do when your blog is small, you want to find 4 or 5 blogs that are related to yours and find a way to write for them. And even if you get rejected at first, don't worry about it. They keep working on it and become a regular contributor. And then you'll see your content start to improve. And also, you'll build those relationships so when you write a blog post you're really proud of on your own blog, or when you come out with a free report or a product, you've built that relationship and those favors up to the point to where they'll promote it for you. And you can make tons of money from, I mean, I'm up to the point where just in referrals from my guest posting traffic, I'm making at a minimum $5,000 on the post. I said on the beginning of the call that based on my pro blogger post, and this is the hard-nosed dollars and cents of it, I'm going to make, if I keep my current conversion rate, which I'm sure I will, I'll make $25,000 to $50,000 off of that guest post. That's one post. So, and the reason why is people that read your content on a big blog like that and they come through and they subscribe, they're 100 times more likely to buy your products. They're 100 times more likely to follow your recommendations because they've already got that relationship with you. So it's not that's the only traffic strategy there is, but when your audience is small, it delivers all of the components to the puzzle that that help you become a more popular blogger.
Right. Excellent. Well, let's tie it up on that point. So, everybody, thanks so much for being here. This has been our call about why your traffic sucks and what to do about it. And the short version is, of course, do some guest posts. And the longer version is listen to the call again. So this has been Johnny B. Truant here with John Morrow. So thanks for being on, John.
I enjoyed it, man. Thanks for having me.
All right, take care, everybody, and we'll send the recording out relatively soon, I suppose. Bye.
Yeah, I'll send it out tomorrow morning. Bye-bye.
All right, take care.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID, followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted. For help with guests.